Hour number two of the program begins right now, coming to you straight out of Hereford House. We're at Hereford House in Leawood, four locations, all of them with a great lunch special that is now available for you from now until 4 o'clock tonight. Leawood, here where we are, Independent, Shawnee, and Zona Rosa. You can make reservations today at herfordhouse.com. They got a great events room upstairs. If you got a big party that you're going to be throwing for any kind of deal, you should check it out. It is a great spot. Herfordhouse.com, the website, the lunch special, country fried chicken and mashed potatoes, or the steak burger and fries, $8.10. Get it all right now at your neighborhood Hereford House, as they have been serving the Kansas City area proudly since 1957. 1957. You're doing a lot of things right when you've been around for more than 60 years. So congratulations to Hereford House for all of their success. So come on out and have some lunch. We'll also get you registered to win some tickets to Def Leppard and Journey. Going to be at Sprint Center tonight. Got a pair of tickets we're going to be giving away. Also got passes to the web.com tour, the Kansas City Classic. Just ask for those, and we'll be able to hook you up. Let's talk some baseball, a little more baseball here with Joe Sheehan before we dive headlong into some more training camp talk. Joe Sheehan writes for Baseball America, Sports Illustrated, the Joe Sheehan newsletter, one of the editors of Baseball Prospectus back in the day. He's on our Sprint guest line. Joe, how are you, my friend?
Good, Sherman. What's going on? It's a busy time, always exciting as we approach the trade deadline.
Oh, it certainly is here in Kansas City. We're on pins and needles, you know, with where things are. And what's amazing is that how engaged the fans are with this team. They have not left it. We debate what's the right way about rebuilding the team. Before we talk about what might happen at the deadline, what do you think of the deals and the talent the Royals have acquired already this year? Anything jump out at you as especially good or especially bad?
Yeah, I was talking with our friend Randy Giserly the other day, and I kind of like the Brian Goodwin pickup. I don't think they really didn't give up anything for him. And it's the kind of flyer that a team in the Royals' position really should be taking. Go out and get a guy who's got a lot of service time left. They control him, I think, for another 4 years. He's 27 years old. So, I mean, the upside, the total upside is not there, but he's basically been a league average player in his career. Right now, I joke that he already becomes like the fourth best player on the team, but I'm not sure it was actually that far from the truth. I really thought that was a good pickup. I know the return for Herrera took some grief in some places, but I think you've got to manage expectations when you're trading a reliever. At the time, they were trading basically 40 innings of Herrera, who's, you know, maybe not the guy he was 2 years ago. I know the ERA was really good, but everything else, you know, good but not great. I think the Royals have done reasonably well. It'll be interesting to see if they end up trading a Whit Merrifield over the next week, if they're able to trade a Mike Moustakas. I think we talked last time, a lot of the same challenges that Moustakas faced in the market, the Royals face in trying to trade him now.
I think the Royals did better than the Mets did, you know, and I think Herrera may or may not be better than Familia. I would probably take him, but I wouldn't argue too much if somebody said I was just being a homer. I don't think if they're both right that he's better than Zach Britton, though. It looks like the Royals did better than the Mets on their deal, but maybe not as good as the Orioles. How do those deals match up, and who did the best job, whether they were the buyer or the seller, out of the six teams involved in those three trades?
That sounds about right to me. I thought the Royals have done pretty well so far in trading Machado and Britton for a total of eight prospects, two of whom in Diaz and Tate are kind of the top end guys. Tate, of course, has been traded twice already. He's had some injury issues. He's been a slow-developing guy, but he's still young enough to have some value to the Orioles. I would agree with you that the Herrera and Familia are similar guys. Herrera's got a better health track record, Familia missing most of last year. I also think that the slot money, the $1 million in international bonus money that the Mets received for Familia is more significant than people are giving it credit for. At a time when teams are limited to how much they can spend, particularly large market teams, adding $1 million in that can help the Mets a lot. So if I were to, you know, kind of go down the line with these teams, I would say that the teams acquiring the pitchers all did pretty well. As the players, I should say. I guess we're talking about the pitchers, not the Machado deal. But I think that the returns probably favor the Orioles, the Royals, and the Mets. Excuse me. In that order.
As we look at it, the Royals are obviously not a contender this year. They didn't think it was going to be this bad. You did think it was, well, yeah, I guess you didn't think it was going to be this bad. You thought it was going to be worse than most. What do you have, Matt? 64 wins, I want to say?
68, 94. Right? It's going to be like the Price is Right, where I'm going to be the low man, and I'm still going to miss by like 10 wins, it looks like.
Yeah, Price is Right rules. One would have been the proper bid on the Royals this year. Although they are kind of riding the ship. Do you like any of their young pitching? I always caution people, a few good starts. You know, Jacob Junis looked like he was going to take over the world at the end of last year and start this year, and then the league starts making some corrections around him. But we have seen some encouraging signs from Heath Fillmyer, from Birch Smith last night, from Keller, Jacob Junis throwing well again the other night. What do you think of the young pitching they've got in the rotation right now?
I think these are basically all back-end type starters in the long run. Birch Smith's 28, so you know, calling him young is a bit of a push. Brad Keller has a good ERA, but really lousy peripherals. You just, in today's game, there's not a whole lot of place for a pitcher who's striking out, you know, 15% of the batters he faces and striking out, you know, a 44-28 strikeout to walk ratio. So I think these are all filler guys. I still like Junis. You know, I still think Junis is probably the best of the bunch that we've seen so far. Trevor Oakes only made 2 starts. He didn't pitch very well. He got knocked around pretty badly, but I think he's somebody they're going to have to bring back up and take a look at some point. It's fun to watch these guys. I remember being a Yankee fan in 1990, and there was a crop of prospects that came up around that time. Steve Shields, Dave Island, Oscar Azokar, Kevin Moss. And we got all excited because it had been a couple of bad years and it was young players. And what it was these guys weren't very good. But then the next group, which was the Pettit, Williams, Jeter group, turned out to be very good. I think the players the Royals are watching, Royals fans are watching right now, aren't the future of the team. But it's more fun than watching, you know, 32-year-old veterans.
Yeah, and did they do it right when they get a little something for John Jay, a young live arm down at the bottom, which is what I think people are most excited about? Did they do it right in signing John Jay and Lucas Duda, if they get anything for him, is that still the way to go? Or would they have just been better off having Hunter Dozier there from the get-go?
No, it's pretty good. I mean, you're gambling. You're basically gambling on will the veteran have a good enough stretch at some point to develop some trade value. And with Jay, he did. Now, Jay, if I remember correctly, started out poorly, then had a hot streak, and the Royals traded him right at the peak of that hot streak. And he's just been pretty effective for the Diamondbacks. That wasn't a bad gamble. It doesn't look like Duda is going to have a ton of value here at the trade deadline. But where the Royals are in their development right now, with a poor farm system where volume matters, if you can spend $3 million on a free agent and convert that into even a top 400 prospect at the trade deadline, you're adding bulk to the system. They don't have the big-ticket items that Machado and Britton were. They decided last year we're going to keep our big-ticket items and then try to win, and it didn't work out. So they're not going to be in the position that the White Sox and the Orioles have been in. On the other hand, flags fly forever, so you kind of say at least they got the championship out of it. But I like the little gambles that they've made. I don't know if this is the forum for it. You know, I'm interested to see if Dayton Moore can pull this off. Dayton Moore, remember, that 2015 team was a very long burn. And even at that, it included some Allard Baird players. Can Dayton Moore, essentially starting from scratch, build a winning team?
He's going to have to draft better, right? We all know that. There's
right.
There's you know, a couple of big misses in Christian Colon and Bubba Starling, and I guess maybe we can throw injury on to Bubba Starling's story now, and a big injury in Kyle Zimmer. But, those three could have been real big difference makers. And so that's the thing about getting a top pick this year. They got to take the right guy, right? I mean, that's got to be one of the things. And, you know, throw in Luke Hochaver instead of Tim Lincecum and Clayton Kershaw and the crew that was in that one. He's going to have to draft better. I grant you that. Do you like what they did in the draft and going all college pitching?
I was surprised to see it. I don't know enough, and Seren, this is a hole in my game. I don't watch these guys. I am not a draft nick. I am not a prospect guy, so I can't evaluate the pitchers individually. But it clearly was a plan, and I have a saying, you're better off executing a bad plan than having no plan at all. And it does seem like they were emphasizing college pitching. It is a surprise to see a team do that when they have a short time, when they don't have a short time horizon. If you're expecting to contend in the next 2 years, taking a lot of college pitching quick to the majors guys makes a lot of sense. We saw a trend in the 2000s where college relievers would go in the first round because teams were like, well, I can get a Chad Cordero or a Ryan Wagner to the majors very quickly. It is a bit of a surprise to see the Royals, who aren't going to be good for a while, take a lot of guys who are quick to the majors pitchers.
It is, and I'm with you. I don't know anything about these guys, right? I watched once they were drafted. I watched Kowar and Singer pitch in the College right. World Series. But the overall philosophy, you know, to me, one of the things the Royals did, and the story of Moneyball, as we've said many, many times, is finding value. That's being mm-hmm. underappreciated. The relievers and frequency of contact guys, whether by design or luck, I don't care either way, it both worked out, were where they found value. The frequency of contact plays well when you get to the postseason and you have all strike throwers, then guys who can put the bat on the ball become more valuable. And, of course, they're great dominant bullpens. We know now everybody is chasing and doing those kind of things. Is it possible that the college pitching, that this is the Royals trying to read the ebb in the appreciation of college pitching? I mean, do you have any sense, or have you talked to anybody that has talked about where – because, I mean, what I hear all the time is position players, right? Nobody wants to move any position prospects. And then, likewise, all the position players went earlier in the draft. That, to me, I'm optimistic that the Royals, that's what they found was the value, is that, you know, Singer would have gone four a number of years ago, or two or three or five or six or something. They got him at 18 because everybody's jamming all the position players up, right? That's good to a point. When you're taking what 3 years ago was a third-round position player at pick number, you know, 32, you'd be better off taking what would have been, you know, the 12th pick as a pitcher a couple years before. You got any theories on that?
No, I think you make a lot of sense. We're seeing the impact of the Cubs drafts over the last 5-6 years. You look at their lineup on any given day, and they've got five of their own top 11 picks in the draft in the lineup. You know, Brian Schwarber, Happ, Almora, and Baez. So yeah, I think that's influenced a lot of the draft rooms around. Also, too, you know, the risk with college pitching is that you don't control these guys' workloads during a sensitive part of their career. And as we've seen with, you know, my friend Keith Laud writes about this all the time, the college coaches don't really care about tomorrow. If college coaches can get a win today, they'll bring the guy out of the bullpen who threw 111 pitches on Tuesday to pitch on Thursday. And that's, you know, the risk you take. And every time you take a college pitcher and have to watch him, immediately you go, let's have his team get eliminated so he doesn't throw any more pitches in the College World Series. So, no, I agree with you that they had a plan. I agree with you that it is absolutely zagging where everybody else is zigging, and you know there's potential to pick up some extra value there. I want to see what they do over a period of years. Is this was where we saw the value this year, or is this is where we see the industry missing a bet over a period of years?
We're talking to Joe Sheehan, his Joe Sheehan newsletter, a must read if you are a true seam head out there, and also writes for Baseball America as well as Sports Illustrated. Joe, how about where the Royals go between now and the deadline? First of all, we know you're not as big on Whit Merrifield, right? We had that discussion. Or have you changed? Have you come around to valuing him a little bit more?
I can't do anything about his birth date, but, you know, clearly he's been a better player than I expected him to be. I got to say that I was wrong about him. The bat-to-ball skills have been real. In today's game, being on pace for 100 strikeouts doesn't really – it almost makes you a contact hitter. But, you know, he's hitting 300. The walk rate's been good, still stealing bags. The defensive numbers aren't what they would be, which is where I thought a lot of the war calculation on him was going to be off. He had ridiculous defensive numbers last year that seemed kind of out of the blue, and we've seen those regress a bit. But no, he's clearly proven himself to be an average plus player. I still think because he's 29, you've got to put him on the market. He's got 4-5 years of control left. I think he's absolutely somebody I would look to move right now. Capitalize that value. People are already coming after me for this opinion, apparently. I absolutely would put him on the market. I don't think you're not going to build around him. He'll be 30 years old next year, and I'm not sure how much more value he's going to pick up. But I clearly think I was wrong about him, Serena. He's a better player than I gave him credit for.
All right, so you know, he's perfect for the National League. We've heard the Red Sox that have interest in him as well. You know, would you deal him with whatever the best deal you can get is, or as the Royals are said to be wanting a lot for him, is he a building block guy?
No, because he's not a building block guy. He's 30 next year. There are no building blocks who are 30 years old. And you run the risk of having the value crumble in your hand. If Whit Merrifield is 10% worse next year, which isn't, you know, an unreasonable projection for a 29-year-old, all of a sudden you're talking about, you know, a two-win player. Defense isn't as good. Maybe he doesn't run as much. Obviously, we would project him to run significantly less as he gets older. You know, the batting average is a significant part of the value, and that could, you know, that bounces around like anything. I think overplaying the hand here, you run the risk of ending up with very little. I would absolutely look to maximize value for him right now, whatever that might look like. I think at this point in time, with the years of control, with the defensive flexibility, with the positional issues some of the contenders have, I think you could bring back a top 100, maybe even a top 75 prospect for Merrifield. I'm talking in broad strokes here. They trade for three prospects who the Royals like but aren't rated. That's, you know, kind of what we're talking about here. But I think you can bring back good value for Merrifield in a market that doesn't really have a ton of OBP and defense. You know, the trade market really doesn't have that kind of guys in it right now.
What's Mike Moustakas worth?
Well, again, you know, this is where we talked about last winter. I mean, Moustakas' problem wasn't Mike Moustakas. Moustakas' problem was the teams that might want him were either constrained by the luxury tax, by the fact that they didn't need players because they didn't care, or the teams that had third baseman. You know, there's been talk, you know, the Red Sox, Rafael Devers hasn't been great for them, but I'm not sure how much better Moustakas is going to be over 2 months. The Braves were seen as a fit, but if you actually look, there's not been that much difference between Johan Camargo and Mike Moustakas. It's really hard to find a perfect spot for him. You know, could the Yankees take him and put him at first base? I know people have talked about that left-handed swing in Yankee Stadium. How much better is he than Greg Bird? It's all the same thing. I don't think you can get a great return from Moustakas. I don't want to put him – he's a better baseball player than John Jay, but I'm not sure he's that much better a trade asset in this market.
Wow. I mean, aren't we undervalued? I get the value of on-base percentage, but aren't you – he's a good catch-and-throw guy at third. I know his range, you know, that says he's not that great over there. He's shown that he can play first. I think if he can play third fairly well, you'll be fine over at first base. I don't know how well he'd pick it till we saw more. But are we undervaluing the ability to hit the ball over the wall?
I mean, that's the one skill everybody has today. It's the one common skill. Low OBP sluggers just aren't getting paid. They aren't getting – there's not a – I mean, if you look at Mike Moustakas, where is he going to bat in a good offense? He's going to bat seventh, might bat eighth for some teams. It's a 466 slugging, which just isn't that great in today's game. The league slugging, I don't have it in front of me, Seren, but it's, you know, it's not that great for a corner guy. It's, you know, last year's year was actually better for Moustakas. Again, I think he's basically an average plus player. He's just caught because he's playing a position that most teams, most contenders are in pretty good shape at. I'm kind of running through the contenders in my head, you know, maybe the Phillies, but Michael Franco has been great for 6 weeks now. I'm not sure they're looking to replace him at third base.
All right, Danny Duffy's the next guy. Listen, I love Danny Duffy. I mean, he's one of my absolute favorites. And, you know, he's left-handed, which I think it's important to have left-handed pitching. But I hate saying this, but isn't he the guy the Royals have to trade? Because he brings, whether it's not necessarily at this deadline, but maybe this offseason, he's the closest thing to a Greinke they've got, particularly if he finishes up strong. Probably his best value would be this offseason with 3 more years of control at roughly a little over $15 million per for the next 3 years. 3 years, $45 million for a lefty with his kind of strikeout potential. To me, that's got to be really valuable, and I do not want to see him wear another uniform, but he is the most valuable commodity they have, is he not?
Well, you we're talking about a 29-year-old, and use the word potential. And I think that's one of the problems here. Danny Duffy is 29. He's qualified for the ERA title once in his career. He's never made 30 starts. He's gone backwards this year substantially with his command. I'm not sure what I'm acquiring if I'm getting Danny Duffy. Could I make the argument that he's Al Leiter and he's going to be better over the next couple of years than he was in his 20s? Absolutely. I think there are a lot of reasons to think that you could acquire Danny Duffy and he'll be better than he's been. But there's that gap in the trade market. The Royals are going to want to trade the guy who had a 2.5 ERA 4 years ago, who was a part of a World Series winning team, who at his best is a number two starter. If you're acquiring Danny Duffy, you're acquiring the guy who is everything else I just said. He's got a, 11% walk rate this year, who's never pitched out a full season.
Yeah, but Joe, his and I don't expect you to, you know the splits on every single guy. His June and July numbers, he is the old
Danny Duffy. I do know that he's been much more effective of late. The velocity has ticked up. And that's the argument for trading him right now, Seren. You make a good point. He's pitched so well of late. You want to try to leverage that. You know, I talked about Merrifield and, you know, the value could crumble. You absolutely want to make the case in the trade market that, hey, look, this is the guy he is. I'm looking at the bigger picture and say this is the guy he's been. But if you're looking to trade Duffy, you're starting the tape on June 1st and you're telling teams, hey, look, this guy could be your number two starter in a playoff series. I think it's hard to pin down what Danny Duffy is, in part because we've seen him look like this before and then either get hurt or go sideways. Again, I want to bring this back to the first principles. Danny Duffy has qualified for the ERA title once in his entire career.
Yeah, no, that's valuable. But if you're in a go-for-it-now mode and you need a starting pitcher over the horizon, it only takes one team to fall in love and two teams to make it a bidding war. So what else is out there that you think besides – is Cole Hamels? What other starting pitchers are actually out there that you would say are better targets than Danny Duffy would be if a contending team is in need of starting pitching?
I almost look at Duffy as somebody who's more attractive to a team like the Padres. The Padres have been asking about Noah Syndergaard and Chris Archer and, you know, because he's controllable and because there's upside and because they have that incredible depth in the system. It's not so much that a contender is going to trade for Duffy because I think you've got that value mismatch, but a team that can speculate on Duffy's future, knowing that they control that future, is a little more interesting to me. So I think the Padres are an interesting match. Plus, when you're making trades, you always want to find the deepest farm system possible, and there's no farm system deeper than the Padres right now. But you're right. This is a difficult market. Let's assume that DeGrom and Archer stay put. The next best starter is J.A. Happ. You're talking about Gausman. You're talking about Bundy. You're talking about Hamels. Stop me when I get to somebody who's going to start one of the first three games of a postseason series for a good team. They're not out there. So Duffy probably is in that same group. I think Duffy and Happ, and if we're focused on contenders, talking about this year, Duffy and Happ are probably comparable assets. Duffy and Gausman are very comparable. I think Duffy and Gausman are probably, in terms of being like frustrating guys who've never really gotten over the top, but you look at the raw stuff and go, oh my God, they could be number two starters. I think they're very comparable. So I think there's a market for Duffy. But I think bridging that gap between what he is and what he could be is a real challenge.
Yeah, no, I agree. And that's why I say I think somebody's going to have to fall in love and really believe in Danny Duffy. If he doesn't get traded, I'll be thrilled to have him here in a Royals uniform because I really like the guy. And I think there is more. Lefties bloom late. And I'm with you. Talking potential to a guy who's 29 years old. Al Leiter, Cliff Lee, those are guys that kind of bloomed late and that you would make the comp for. But out of the names you mentioned, I like Danny Duffy over all of them, save, like you said, a Chris Archer. If he's out there, then I'd take Chris Archer. But in particular, if you need a left-hander, I mean, isn't that part of why Zach Britton brought back what he brought? They needed the left-hander in the bullpen. Lefties are still really valuable. We don't talk about it as much as we used to because we just talk about the numbers and on base and that. But, you know, lefties are important. I mean, does that boost his value?
See, I would disagree with you, particularly in the American League. If you look at the contenders in the American League, if you look at the American League as a whole, I wrote about this back in March. Joe Posnanski did an article on this. There's a real imbalance in the American League this year where if you look at last year's MVP voting, just to pull out a data point, just two left-handed batters got MVP votes in the American League last year. One was Didi Gregorius, the other was Eric Hosmer. If you look at the top hitters on the Astros, Yankees, and Red Sox, 8 of the top 11 are right-handed. And all of the ones that you're gonna name, you got to get down to Andrew Benintendi, the best left-handed hitter in the league right now. So you actually don't need lefties the way we used to. Britton's a separate case. Britton's valuable because he's a reliever, because he is an extreme ground ball pitcher, because he's shown an effectiveness against right-handers. Relievers are in a different category right now. But no, Seren, I would disagree with you. I don't think left-handed starters have a special value right now at all.
Well, you know, Joe, who the hell are you and who the hell is Joe Posnanski? You know,
I'm not sure if bringing him up, I'm not sure if anybody in the market had heard of him. He's written for MLB.com. He's written for, he's based in Charlotte right now. I forget where he came from.
Thanks. Yeah, thanks. Thanks for the update. No, I love Joe. Joe's great. And that is, you know, I had not seen that piece and I had not realized it. That's you know, it is that right-handed heavy right now. So that does probably hurt the Royals. So we're talking to Joe Sheehan here in the program. All right, did the Orioles, last question, because the Orioles and Royals are going to duel it out for the number one overall pick. What lessons do we take away from the Orioles and how they handled things and going all the way to the wire with Manny Machado? Is this another example of them – of a team that just couldn't admit when it was up, when it was over?
I find it's best to never take lessons from the Orioles. let's not forget, they were in the playoffs in 2016. Now, I would have traded Machado that winter because you look at the Yankees, you look at the Red Sox, you're realistically playing for the wild card at best. Your team isn't very good. They got a lot of bullpen magic, a lot of Showalter magic to have the run that they had from 2012 to 2016. Clearly, the return could have been better a year ago. It could have been better over the winter. They did well for trading him as a rental. But, yeah, having a more realistic view of what your team is. This wasn't the 2016-17 Royals, who were, in 16, they were a decent team. In 17, they at least had a credible wild card case. The 2017-18 Orioles were a bad team, and we knew they were going to be a bad team. So, no, I think that the lesson is you got to have a realistic view of what you are. And for the most part in today's game, Seren, teams are very good at self-evaluation. The Orioles haven't been.
Yeah, no. And I think that's going to be one of the keys. I think the Pirates and Mariners are teams that really need – the Mariners are a little different. Mm-hmm. They need to get that stink of not going to the playoffs off them. So they got to be all in and try to make it happen. But, like, the Pirates' win streak is, like, the worst thing I think could happen to them because they're not that good. And so now they might mess around with some kind of diet buying session. You know, a Trevor Cahill instead of a Johnny Cueto, if you know what I mean. Kind of the way the Royals did last year, and it won't be enough, and then they'll set back what would be ultimately building for the future run where they have a better chance. We're talking to Joe Sheehan here, writes for Baseball America, Sports Illustrated, and, of course, his great Joe Sheehan newsletter, which I invite everybody to subscribe to. Joe, my final four, it's brought to you by Mosquito Squad, kansascity.mosquitosquad.com, or call 877-MO-SQUAD to protect your family, friends, and pets from the bugs that bite, whether it's the full-season protection barrier plan that I use, or it's just an event spray for a big event you've got coming up. It's kansascity.mosquitosquad.com. I start you with this, Joe. The lunch special is $8.10 at all four Hereford houses. Would you go with the country fried chicken and mashed potatoes and gravy, or would you go with the steak burger and fries?
Probably the country fried chickens. I don't have that very much, and I love mashed potatoes, so we'll go with that.
Oh, guys. Yeah, you and me and my oldest daughter, mashed potatoes and gravy, just what a delicacy. One of the great foods on earth. Nice call. All right, the Royals record will be, we know what you said going into the year. What do you think it's going to be now when it's all said and done? Boy, look out for that young pitching, though, Joe.
I'm just looking quickly here. Let's say 61-101.
Okay, yeah, that's better than most Royals are talking, like 150, defying mathematical possibilities. That's how bad they think it's going to be. Mike Moustakas' career home run total ends up being what? He's at 139 right now. How many home runs are left for the Moose?
183.
Is his career total?
Yes, that's another 50-something.
That would be 44 more.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Wow. Wow.
It's a tough market for low OBP sluggers.
Yeah, I okay. I got to take the over on that. I know, you know, I'm making you draw a number. I was thinking more along the lines like 246, something along those lines, 250. But okay. All right. I like it. I like the boldness of it. And finally, the 2019 number one pick goes to who?
The Orioles are going to chase 120 losses. they were bad before, and they're going to be denuded of their best players. This is an awful, awful team. The second half Orioles are going to be one of the worst teams we've seen. I mean, I guess you go back to those Astros teams early in the decade, but I mean, this is 2003 Tigers, expansion Blue Jays, 1962 Mets kind of bad.
Okay. Well, we'll take the second pick. There's two great players, allegedly. As much as you can be a great player in a baseball draft with the crapshoot that it is. So we'll take the second pick if that's the way it goes. Joe, always great talking to you, buddy. Great stuff. I invite everybody to get the Joe Sheehan newsletter. If you're a baseball aficionado, if you love baseball, you're going to love Joe's writings on it. Appreciate the time, buddy, and we'll talk to you again soon. Oh, we lost Joe. Okay. All right. There we go.
If you're going to drop it, that's about the best time to do it.
Yeah.
Right as you're saying goodbye.
Yeah, I guess so. Joe does a great job. So there you go. There you have it. They do a great job at Hereford House. They've been doing a great job since 1957. Four locations. I mentioned the lunch special, 810 for the country fried steak, country fried chicken, and mashed potatoes and gravy, or the steak burger and fries. It's just $8.10 at all four locations for your neighborhood Hereford House. We're here in Leawood, just a little bit to the north of 119th and Road. The street address, if you want to GPS it, 5001 Town Center Drive here in Leawood.